Welcome to Movie Maker. I'm Tim Malloy, and today our guest is Alex Convery, screenwriter of the new Ben Affleck film Air, which tells the 1984 set story of Nike executive Sonny Vaccaro, played by Matt Damon, and his desperate quest to get an NBA rookie named Michael Jordan to sign with the shoe company. It's a very fun, fast-moving, surprisingly emotional movie about paying people what they're worth, and its message parallels the work of Affleck and Damon's new production company, Artist Equity, which shares profits with both actors and off-camera artisans. Great idea. Alex Convery grew up in the 90s in Chicago, when Michael Jordan was a cross between a superstar and a superhero, but rather than tell Jordan's story, Convery focused on his mom, Dolores, who was played in the film by Viola Davis. If you haven't noticed, 2023 is turning out to be a pretty great movie year. My favorites so far also include Megan and Creed 3, and Air looks like the first very likely Oscar contender. I'm also very excited about Britt McAdams' Paint, which is out this Friday, and stars Owen Wilson as a public TV painter who is not Bob Ross, whatever you may have heard. I interviewed McAdams and Owen Wilson for the latest issue of Movie Maker magazine, which is out now wherever you buy magazines. You can also subscribe to Movie Maker at moviemaker.com. I recommend it. Also, quick heads up, there's a mention in this interview of the William Goldman book, Adventures in the Screen Trade. I also highly recommend William Goldman's Which Lie Did I Tell, which is kind of a sequel to Adventures in the Screen Trade. William Goldman is, I'm just going to say, the greatest screenwriter ever. He wrote Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. He wrote All the President's Men. He wrote Misery. He's just, there's no one better. There's never been anyone better. I don't know if there will be anyone better. It made me very happy to hear that Alex Convery is maybe an even bigger William Goldman fan than I am. So, here's Alex Convery. That's a name you're going to be hearing a lot more, perhaps even at the Oscars. Really like the movie. So much fun. I saw it in Boston, which was like seeing it in church. Because
amazing.
Like a total Ben and Matt fan club there. And got a super good response. And I guess the first thing I should ask is just, how did you start off in screenwriting?
How did I start off in screenwriting?
Hollywood, because I understand that you also worked in 30 for 30 and you did some other things. So just
kind of, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago telling everyone I wanted to be a doctor because that's what you're supposed to say. And I'm a Midwestern people pleaser and I don't like rocking the boat or conflict, even though conflict is paramount to all good screenplays. I had that moment when I was like 16 or 17 and deciding where to go to college and what to do with my life, where I was like, I don't know why I've been lying to myself and everyone. Also, I have a C- in biology, so I probably couldn't even be a doctor if I wanted to. And my dad, I was getting into like serious movies at the time, right? I was always a big movie guy. I go to the movies every Friday, like by myself with friends. I miss those days where it was like, you just go see anything without any pretense. And like, just, you were there for the medium almost more than anything. I was 16 and getting into like, you know, serious movies, and that was, I was 15, I guess. So it would have been like 2007, right? Like No Country, There Will Be Blood, Zodiac, Michael Clayton, just like Mount Rushmore year, and still where like most of my influences come from. And my dad had got me a book on the Coen brothers, and it turned out to be their collected screenplays. It was the first time I'd ever seen a screenplay. I was reading Blood Simple and then Raising Arizona and then Miller's Crossing, Barton Fink. And it just all clicked, you know, the minute I saw that and read them and went back and watched the movies with the screenplay, it's like, holy crap, that's what I want to do. It's just a kid from Chicago. It's not like we had any route to get to Hollywood. So I ended up coming out here for the USC summer program and taking like your basic intro to screenwriting course between my junior and senior year of high school. And it was just like the best 6 weeks of my life. You know, I just finally felt like I found my place and people and what I wanted to do. And it made senior year of high school excruciatingly hard because you had to go back and take all these. Can we swear on this? I was about to say.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All these bullshit courses that I didn't want to take. But then I was like, I didn't want to do anything else. I want to get back out to LA. I want to get back out to USC. I want to write screenplays. And you know, I was lucky enough to get into the screenwriting program. Came back out here, you know, did my 4 years of film school, which was really great. You know, and you know, at the same time, it's like they treat it very seriously. It's like this prestigious program, but you're also 18, 19, 20 years old. It's like, what the hell are you going to write about? You know, it's you have no life experience and all of that. So it's like, you know, you leave that program thinking like, I'm ready to go and I'm going to go sell a screenplay and direct movies and like I'm in it. But, you know, it doesn't work like that. You know, it's a very long road no matter what. So I worked as an assistant for 2 years. That's where like the 30 for 30 connection came in. I was working for a producer who produced Soul Man, the 30 for 30 on Sonny. And just trying to write on the side, man, was really hard. It was. So I ended up just getting like a normal person day job, 9 to 5. I was in ed tech sales, going to colleges, trying to sell online tutoring. But it really allowed me to write. And in that span of 2 years, I wrote the script Bagman, which you know, got me my manager and agent. And, you know, it was one of many moments where I look back and thought at the time, like, oh, my God, I made it in Hollywood. You know, I was spending all this time thinking, like, if I just had an agent and manager, like, everything would be okay. And I would be a working writer. And, you know, you quickly realize it doesn't work like that, right? Like, it's all this stuff is just more opportunity, right? Even like made the Blacklist in 2018. And it's just like, oh my God, like I just dreamed of making the Blacklist. And, you know, it's like now everything will happen for me. And again, it doesn't work like that. So you keep writing, you know, and Bagman had this long journey of like almost going, not going, you know, movie stars attaching to it, not going. It's just like, it's painful, you know, and you learn very quickly that it's like, you have to keep working, you know, you just have to keep writing, no matter in success and even more so in failure. You know, again, I did the same thing. You know, I wrote another script. It was a biopic about Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and the early days of Marvel Comics and, you know, kind of their rise and then the break in their friendship and why it happened. And, you know, kind of this whole thing about, you know, how capitalism is the water in the gears of art. And like, you know, I was really proud of that script. And Sony had his life rights and, you know, Sony came close to engaging on it. And it looked like for 48 hours, like, oh my God, they're going to do this. And then they didn't.
God, I want to see that movie.
Me too, man. I mean, I, you know, I think it will happen eventually just because it's such a great story, you know, whether it's probably not going to be my script, but like, it's just, it's great. You know, it's such a, such an American tale of you know, these two guys working out of a janitor closet who created like literally the foundation of our current pop culture. But, you know, it got too big and too fast and they didn't have equity in any of it. And they were still just contracted employees and it's just, you know, it just exploded. But I love it. You know, I love everything about it. But so anyway, I was like, okay, well, I learned my lesson. I'm never going to spec a biopic or something about true events when I don't control the rights. But there I was in May of 2020, you know, locked up during quarantine like everyone else and watching The Last Dance and episode 5 comes on and, you know, wow. You get this 5 minute little mini segment on Nike and Michael Jordan on how the deal never should have happened and how, you know, Adidas and Converse, you know, had it in the bag, but made all these tactical missteps. And I was just sitting there like, you know, God damn it, this is a movie. And I was like, I'm sure someone has tried to do this already, you know, either like spec'd it, or I'm sure there's like a dead script sitting around. I knew Shoe Dog, you know, had been around for a little bit. But, you know, lo and behold, I started just poking around and looking and it was like, man, yeah, I don't think anyone's done this. Wow. And then like Sonny flashed back to me, you know, all those years later, and he had been cut. It was weird. He wasn't in The Last Dance. I subsequently learned he had been interviewed, but was cut out. And, you know, suddenly I had the protagonist of the movie, or at least your POV for the movie. And, you know, I was just like, man, I kind of have no choice but to write this thing, even though I know it's like can never happen and won't get made, and is a horrible, strategically and from a business sense, is a horrible use of your time. And that is why I didn't tell anyone I was writing it. You know, like literally for a year, I was just working on it, like during nights and weekends, and whenever I had some downtime from you know the stuff I was being paid to write at the time. But I think that really helped the script, you know, like I didn't have any guardrails. I wasn't getting any notes, not to say notes hurt a script because they help, but it was just like, I was just going on it, you know, and I was so certain that it wasn't going to get made that I tried to make the screenplay as like a readable document that much better and engaging and like, you know, definitely broke some rules in terms of like, you know, you're taught like, don't write anything the camera can't see. Don't speak to your reader. Don't say we see, you know? And it was just like, I did all of that in the script because I was like, you know, it has to work as a written sample because that's what it's going to be. And then it took me a while. It took me a year, you know, because I was just working on it in like bits and pieces whenever I could grab some downtime. And then, you know, I finished it and or a draft of it at least and sent it to my agents and managers and said, you know, I know you guys are going to kill me, but I have done it again. I have spec'd a kind of biopic adjacent type thing that I control no rights to. And they said, you're right. I wish you had told us you were writing this so we could have told you to stop, but we really like the script. And we're going to, you know, at least send it to some places and see what happens. And you know, why this one instead of the other ones? I don't know. You know, like there's not really a science to it, but people were just interested in it. And you know, there were a couple of places that were interested in optioning it. I ended up going with Mandalay and Skydance Sports because the guy who runs Skydance Sports, John Weinbach, directed Soul Man and knew Sonny and had a connection to Sonny and was like, you know, we can get to Sonny and talk to him about the script and get him involved. And then, you know, the Mandalay side of it, Mandalay made The Last Dance and, you know, Peter Guber's a partial owner of the Warriors. So it's like, okay, like if there's any route to getting this thing produced, you know, these are probably the necessary connections you need. So they optioned it. And then, you know, I drove down to Palm Springs and met Sonny and his wife, Pam, and, you know, just spent the day with them. And we went through the script and talked about, you know, what we got right, what we got wrong. And I did, you know, kind of a quick pass on the script based on that. And then we went out to talent over the holiday break of 2021. And, you know, we went to like our couple like dream scenarios who were inevitably going to pass. And then we could come back from the break and actually go to the people that would be, you know, that would make the movie or, you know, just keep going down the list. And, you know, Ben was on that list and, I just got the call that was like, you know, he read it, he likes it, he's interested. And we'll see. And then 2 days later I got another call that was like, you know, clear your schedule on Tuesday. Like we're gonna sit down with him. And sorry, I know I just said this is a long answer to your question.
This is a great answer. No, I just want to say I totally agree with you on it being so readable and not necessarily a normal, typical, you know, by the rules script, but it's also that, and the version I saw on the blacklist, I don't know if it's it's probably not the final version, but really does like assume that the reader has some knowledge and plays with that fact.
Yeah.
Really just, it has like a William Goldman way of just grabbing you and saying, hey, we're along for this ride together. Let's sort of have a conversation as you're reading. It's a great.
Yeah. Well, adventures, screenshot of my Bible, so that you don't have to look too hard to see that influence on it. In fact, I was probably rereading it for like the 100th time as I was writing this. But yeah, you know, like from day one, Ben, you know, saw the movie, got the movie, you know, was honest about like, you know, he and Matt were gonna do a pass on it. I mean, it was funny in that meeting. It's like very casually, like, yeah, Matt's read it too, and you know, would be interested in doing it. It's just like, okay. you try to be as casual as possible. And then, I mean, you know, from there, that was like late January, early February of 2022. And then, you know, by June we were shooting, you know, it's just like one of those things that, you know, it probably will never, be replicated again in my career, but it's, you know, it is how these things are supposed to work on paper, right? You write a script, you get a production company involved, you go out and find someone who wants to star in the movie and direct the movie, and then you get a studio to finance it, and then you go make it. Like, that is how it is supposed to work, but it just so rarely happens. You know, it's just like something always goes wrong every step of the way. And you know, look, I've said this a bit, but it's like any movie that gets made was the right person reading the right script at the right time. And this one especially had a lot going against it, right? But I didn't know it obviously at the time, but you know, Matt and Ben starting this new company, Artist Equity, and the values of that company and the stuff they were, that was just on their minds. Obviously, you know, in the script and the third act of the movie especially is like really about all of the stuff that it's kind of a mission statement for, you know, what they want to do. So it's just, it was kind of kismet, you know, like if either of them had read it 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we're probably not sitting here, you know, and Air Jordan is just another blacklist script that that got me one step closer to my first produced screenplay, you know, but it was just, it you know, it was lucky more than anything.
Well, there is kind of a workers owning the means of production thing going on in the Stan Lee and Jack Kirby script and in this one. And
yes.
In the idea of Actors Equity, which I'm going to try to just ballpark it, but it's essentially that people will have, everybody who works on the film will have equity in the film. It's not just we're taking the profits and enjoying them. It's, if this is a hit, it's a hit for everybody.
Yeah, that's right. And it's just that, you know, it's about like, you know, how can you make a leaner movie, a faster movie, you know, like can we just get to the essentials of a production, and by a product of that, can we pay everyone more? You know, it's admirable what they're chasing, you know, like guys at that level don't have to you know, do that, and it's cool, you know, like it was just really a joy to see, you know, two guys at that level be like super motivated and passionate and chasing an idea, you know, like just like they were when they were 26, you know.
Yeah, so you're born in about 91,
92. Yeah,
92. So how hard was it to write about a time that you weren't alive in, and to write really perceptively about that time? I mean, you obviously have the benefit of looking back and seeing, we don't know it, but this deal is going to be a really good deal. How did you recapture that era? What did you read? What did you watch?
It was just, you know, one, obviously start the research in a really, I can't say it, insular way, right? Which is like, with Sonny, with Nike, with Phil Knight, with the other characters, you know, there's a book called Swoosh, which is written by Julie Strasser, who's Bateman's character, Rob Strasser's wife, second wife, as the movie details. So that was really, you know, that was like my Bible on this. And then you just start branching off, right? Read Shoe Dog, obviously, to kind of get a better handle on Phil Knight. Went back to all the Sonny stuff. And then, you know, Jordan, there's obviously a ton on him, from David Halberstam's Playing for Keeps to all the journalism Wright Thompson of ESPN has done on Jordan and his family and legacy and history and Caroline and all of it. But then you get even broader than that, right? Which is what was going on in 1984, you know, which, like you're saying, I couldn't have told you, but, you know, learning, you know, about the election that year and the Olympics and just the political climate, you know, not to say it like is ever really super present in the film or the script, but it like, it sets the tone, you know, even if it's more helpful in little details, right? Like the Reagan dartboard, or Sonny saying, you know, Phil saying we took four golds at the Olympics, you know, and like all those little things add up together to kind of be more than the sum of their parts, but it, you know, it's important. And then, you know, obviously once Ben took everything over, it was like, you know, the 84 part of it was very important to him, the needle drops, the setting, the atmosphere. And look, I mean, a lot of it too is credit to costumes. I mean, Shirley's did like an incredible job. Francois, the production designer, just crushed it. You know, it's like that and props. I mean, it just, yeah, it was A plus all the way around.
I can't remember a better soundtrack. In going back to like maybe Dazed and Confused or like a Tarantino movie, like it does such a good job of finding those songs that are totally emblematic of the time without being too obvious.
Yeah.
But it covers.
Yeah, I mean, even down to like the Tangerine Dream score. I mean, that obviously so it was not in the script and not something I ever thought of. But like, I'll never forget seeing the director's cut for the first time and being like, man, this is really working. Yeah, look, I mean, that's all a credit to Ben and Billy, the editor. I mean, you know, it's that stuff can become grating, you know, if it's not done correctly. Yeah, I mean, Billy's, I mean, he's an Oscar winner for a reason.
No, it felt exactly right. And even the beginning where you go, why hasn't anyone used this song as the intro of a movie before?
I
This
know.
is
I know. I know.
fun.
We went through a couple songs. I say we, I mean, Ben and Billy went through a couple songs on over that beginning. And like, yeah, Money for Nothing is just when you heard it's like, all right, they found the right one.
Affleck has talked about how he got that Michael Jordan told him basically to hire Viola Davis to play his mom.
Yeah.
And I guess her role was expanded a lot when that
Yep.
happened. It's kind of hard to imagine the movie without her having that big of a role. So can you talk about
Yeah.
how that role changed?
Yeah, I mean, you know, she was always in the script, and was always kind of like the proxy for, you know, the voice of the Jordan family, you know, the you know, Carolina scene and Sonny and in their backyard. Like that stuff was always in there. You know, it was really the third act stuff where once Viola signed on, it that phone call about like the percentage of sales, you know, had passed through a lot of different iterations and voices, and like David Falk was on it at one point, and you know, it's just as like, you know, we were like, what if it's Michael Jordan's idea? And then it was, you know, after Ben sat with Jordan, you know, he came away thinking like, yeah, Dolores was the you know, the key part of all of this, and you know, that should be her moment. And yeah, I mean, you know, full credit to Matt and Ben for that scene, which I think is the best scene in the movie. You know, it's fun. I mean, even there was so much invention on the movie too, like even on set, which is the benefit of working with, you know, all these talented actors who are also filmmakers. I mean, Viola improv, to me, what's the best line in the movie, which is like, a shoe is just a shoe until someone steps in it. That was always in there, but then out of nowhere, she's like, until my son steps into it. It's like, damn, you know, like that is the power of having a performer like that and someone who fully inhabits the character and is able to, in that moment, capture like a truth that was certainly never evident to me on the page.
Wow. It's good of you to give credit to so many other people. I mean, obviously, I think there's a lot of very good grounding stuff in the script that may not be super, it may not be like the lines that are going to be in the Oscar reel.
Right,
But
correct.
the detail about like Jason Bateman, his arrangement with his ex-wife put so much heart into it. This thing that
Yeah.
could be a movie about like, oh, it's a bunch of guys who are going to be really rich soon, making a
Yep.
big deal. And it ends up having like
Yep.
real stakes. How do you add stakes when you know the and you know the outcome, and most people in the audience know the outcome, but I'm still on
Yeah.
my seat about how this is going to go down.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's like it's such a cliche thing, but like you hear it all the time, right? Which is like it's not about the destination, it's about the journey, you know? It's like honestly, it's like every good mystery movie, you know? It's like we don't really care about like we say we care about the answer, but it's much more interesting like how they solve it, you know? So like for me it was look, there are disadvantages to the audience knowing the ending of the movie when they walk in, right? But to me it's always like as long as you know your disadvantages, you can flip them on, you can try your best to flip them on their head and use them as advantages, right? So like you can be a little coy with some of the dialogue, right? And really play up just how much people doubted Jordan, which is true, you know? And like that was some of the hardest stuff was like, okay, how am I going to actually instill in people that like Jordan was just the third pick and everyone knew he would be good, but few knew he would be great. And like how, you know, that part was to do it and not make it like just an exposition dump was a big challenge. But no, back to, you know, your question, it's just you try to make them human, you know, and ask like who are these people and what are their problems? And okay, they're at the office over the weekend, you know, what are the potential like what would they be talking about and what are they missing out of? And whether it's like, you know, the divorce and the child or it being his birthday, you know, you just look for like those human moments in something that could become plot heavy. And then honestly, it's like People have asked me, like, what sports movies did you go back and watch for this? And it's like, I really didn't watch any sports movies. I mean, Moneyball obviously is like one of my favorite movies ever, which you can probably tell from the fact that I wanted to, take on a project like this. So, but I could practically recite that movie. But other than that, I really was going back and watching, what Soderbergh calls like process movies, which are like, again, kind of movies you probably know the ending to, but it's the process of how you get there that's interesting. So, like, not to sound like super pretentious, but it was like, kind of look at this as like a heist movie or a caper movie, right? And like all of those movies have like the central tenet of like getting the team together, and all of them have these really distinct personalities. So whether it was like in Ocean's 11 or any other of the kind of like getting a gang together, it was like really studying how those type of movies make each member of the team stand out as an individual and have their own voice. So it was like, I think you see it in the most in this, in those scenes like over the weekend, right? Where it's like you just have to make the voice of Sonny distinct from Strasser, who's distinct from Peter Moore, who's distinct from Howard White, who's distinct from Phil Knight, and really like, building conflict out of that too. Like you never want it to feel like, man, these guys are going to work really well together. You want it to be the opposite, right? Which is like, how the hell is this misfit group gonna figure this out? So yeah, I mean, it's, it's never, it takes a lot of work, but it all comes back to character, as most of screenwriting does.
How much did you fictionalize or not fictionalize the moment where we realize how good Sonny is at spotting great players? That sequence where he explains why Jordan is going to be great. And you watch it on the tape and you don't see it the first time. And then you finally see it as he explains it, and you go, oh my God, this guy's brilliant. And of course he turns out to be right.
It's so the fictionalization is that Sonny was actually at that game. He was at the championship game and saw Jordan hit the shot. So, cut to 2 years later when they're having to pick a player, Sonny always says, like, it's just something about that shot that stuck in my mind. The fact that he got the ball as a freshman. So then I was like, okay, obviously, you're not going to flash back to him at the game and like to try and explain, like, I was there, but now I'm here. It's just like, you want to be try to be a little more creative than that. So it was like, okay, it's that shot. So let's just take everything that, he's talked about in that shot and kind of instill it into, that moment. And the Lin and the Dean Smith stuff, like that's something Sonny mentioned a lot too. Like Dean never played freshman. So it was like, it was adding all that in there. And then the Linwood Robinson thing was Matt found that
Oh,
and
really?
added it. Which I really love, because it is like, who's Linwood Robinson? I just love that that's the way they start that scene. But yeah, all of the rest of it was kind of like just talking to Sonny and taking like all his thoughts on that moment and kind of mashing them together. Cause it's funny, like, he says in the movie, like, I have this feeling. And when you ask Sonny, like, how did you know about Michael Jordan? Like, why Michael Jordan? He's like, it was that shot. Like, I don't know. I can't explain it to you other than you watched that shot and I just knew. So it was, yeah, finding the way to best like capture the truth of that sentiment while also making it make sense in the like linear structure of the movie.
Do you have any other screenwriting Bibles? I mean, I love that Goldman book, but anything else?
No, I'm very much like not a the reason I like Adventures in the Screen Trade is because William Goldman is so open about like there are no rules and you should do whatever makes the script most readable. I also love just all the practical Hollywood advice in there, the whole stretch about agents and meetings. And it's just like that if you ever have as a writer like a conundrum in Hollywood, even though this book was written 50 years ago, like the answer to it lies somewhere in that book. And it's so it the book's not about how to write a screenplay so much, it's like how to write well, which I think a lot of the other screenplay books are like, this needs to happen on page 17. And then by the midpoint, like this, blah, 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 blah. And it's just like every project is so different. No, look, my screenwriting Bibles are actual screenplays, like that when people ask, like, where did you learn? I mean, I went to film school, obviously, but like my most educational moments were reading Michael Clayton for the first time, or reading Lady Bird, or reading the original draft of Story of Your Life, which became Arrival, and it's like getting a sense of what is alive on the page that translated to the movie, So like to me, that's it. You just you read scripts to your favorite movies, you read you know, stuff that is out in the market, and just like, you know, take from it what you will and leave behind what you don't need. But yeah, every script is different, so I don't try to like prescribe any giant rules other than like have a really compelling character and inject as much conflict as you can into it, you know. Like, it sounds simple, but it's incredibly hard.
I love that. I know I'm out of time, but just thank you so much and congratulations on this. Like, it's just, it's nice to hear a story of somebody who worked really hard and it worked out.
Yeah, look, I mean, I had a lot of luck and a lot of breaks along the way. So it's just, you know, you can only control what you can control. And that's, you know, write as well as you can and put as much material out there as you can and just, you know, cross your fingers and hope that it gets to the right person. So it's keep going, you know, that's what it comes down to.
You know, I should ask one last thing.
Sure.
When people hear this is a Blacklist script, I think there's an assumption that it was found on the Blacklist and that's how it happened. Is that how?
Yeah, that's gone out there a little bit. It was on the Blacklist, but at that point it had already been optioned. And like I'd already met Sonny. So it wasn't found on the Blacklist. You know, I was on the, you know, I've been on the Blacklist 3 times, and it's like, I you know, I think people just associate that with like, you know, the, like giving the Blacklist credit for the script, which like, look, I, Franklin and the Blacklist is great. What they do is great. And they're, the way they advocate for writers is like second to none in Hollywood. And I would recommend the paid Blacklist to like aspiring screenwriters, but no, like this one was, I mean, really it's credit to my manager and my agent for getting it in the right hands. And then ultimately Mandalay and Skydance are the ones who got it to Ben and Matt. So,
Did you get your manager and agent perhaps through those Blacklist successes?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's, you know, to make the, you know, year-end Blacklist, a lot of it is just how many people are reading this and responding to the screenplay, and the ones who send the screenplay out are you know, your manager and agent. So yeah, my manager Faisal and my agent Jordan, you know, they've been with me from the beginning and believed in me for a long time when no one else really did. So it's, you know, they deserve a ton of credit as well.
Oh, I meant, that's a great answer, but I meant, I phrased this better. Did you find them because of your Blacklist success?
Oh, I see.
Why they in the first place. Okay.
No. I got my manager, through a film school friend, you know, and like that's the biggest part of like working as an assistant or even just an intern is like, you know, look, I hate the like network and like it's all about who you know. It's not necessarily true, but you know, so much of screenwriting is you know, what I tell people is like you can have the best script in the world, but if you don't have anyone to show it to, then it just sits there, right? Now the other side of it is you can know everyone in Hollywood, but if you don't have a great script, then what's the point? So it's like, how do you balance those two things, right? I mean, to get a break in Hollywood or make it, you need someone to kind of give you a chance or permission, or send the script to the right person. So like, you know, it's hard to get reps. I mean, it took me forever. And by the way, reps aren't always the answer. Like, kind of like we were talking about earlier, I thought when I got my manager and agent, I would be, you know, I was set and we were good and we would go. And it still took 4.5 years to get something made. So it's just like, you just have to keep working. But no, it was, you know, just another young Hollywood assistant who knew my manager, who passed along my script bagman to them. And, you know, that's how it happened.